Good evening, everyone. I look at our screen and my screen, and I see that we are 12 in 6 countries, 3 time zones, and yet we are all. The time right now is now for all of us. We're all appearing on this black background, each with our own colors and features and backgrounds, but the size of our rectangles are the same. Saying that, I want to I would ask that we dedicate our practice tonight to the memory of George Floyd, for whom there is a memorial service happening at this very moment in Minneapolis, the city where, as you all know, he was murdered 10 days ago. And we've all seen what has happened since then and what is continuing to happen. I also would like to speak tonight to that subject. In my interviews in recent days with people, this subject has reappeared in my conversations with people that I don't practice with. The subject comes up in various different ways. And I think as Zen practitioners, it's essential for us to look at this, what's happening and what it's about, and how our practice can relate to it, and how we can work with this situation, not specifically in the details of American society and the deep, deep problems that American culture and society has, but how it relates to each one of us and the cultures in which we live, in the societies in which we live, in our own lives, and within ourselves. As some of you know, I grew up in Minneapolis. I lived there for the first 20 years of my life. I still have family there. So for me, there is a very particular relationship with this subject. I'm also American. I'm also French now, but by birth, I'm American. So I have another direct link with this. But ultimately, we don't have to be from Minneapolis or an American to feel the depth of outrage, anger, pain, fear, despair, whatever it is that we're feeling. Because just as we're all appearing on this screen in equal size boxes, the boundaries, the nationalities, the cities we're from, we're all one. So we are George Floyd. We are the 4 policemen. I know we don't like to hear that, but we are. And what's important for us is to recognize that and look into what that means. So I've been looking around for, in my own practice and in my own teachings and in the teachings I received and the different teachers I've practiced with and learned from, for guidance. And I realize that actually what the training that I have received and that I transmit to you all, it's always about the heart. So it's coming back to the heart. The answers are there. And as we know in our Zen practice, we do a lot of just sitting. So we just, and you hear me tell you this too, sit with it, stay with it. And that is what we need to do. At the same time, our practice has this aspect of active questioning and inquiry. For those of you who work on koans, you know that that's what you do. You inquire into it. You look deeply into whatever is arising. One of our basic tenets is not knowing. And in order to not know, that implies we need to question. So in this circumstance, we need to question our beliefs, our biases, our fears, our opinions about racism, police brutality, protest, looting, inquire, look into all of our, as we did in the beginning of this pandemic, I encourage you to do the same thing. Look at your anger, despair, righteousness, horror, outrage, sadness, whatever it is you're experiencing. Don't turn away from it. Don't try to push it away. Someone in an interview I had earlier was saying, I know, people are so caught up in emotion, and I know we're not, I try to push them away from emotions, but the idea is not to push people away from emotions, it's not to be attached to the emotions, but we do have to recognize them. We have to acknowledge them. That's the really basic thing we have to do. Acknowledge whatever's arising, whatever we're feeling about this. It's not easy. It's not easy to acknowledge the full-on extent of it, because it's painful sometimes, and it's outrageous. If any of you have watched that video, it's just impossible to sit there and not experience some kind of emotion. But if we really look into it and question our emotions, then we have a better chance of then seeing the situation as it is, being present to whatever it is. It doesn't mean finding a solution, this step. This step is about listening, looking, being present with whatever it is. Taking a step back now from the emotions that you've been so caught up in, but now you've managed to let go a bit and you can, what we could say, bear witness. We can bear witness then to the presence of what we call the three poisons. And everything that is happening today in the world, not only around this event, but everywhere you look, you can see what we call the three poisons. We translate that as greed, anger or hatred, and ignorance or delusion. You can see this everywhere. And these are not abstract concepts. It manifests very concretely in our own lives, in our own hearts. We experience greed, we experience anger, we experience delusion, ignorance, we experience it. But this moment is a fabulous moment to practice witnessing those things in action. So we can see the hatred is coming up. We can see the ignorance. The policeman would not kneel down on the man's neck for 8 minutes if he truly were aware what he was doing. It's ignorance. It's delusion. The hatred of racism, the hatred that is implied in racism, is at the root of racism. Very present. The greed that permits the system to perpetuate the racism, that perpetuates exploitation, not only based on racism, but on a whole array of discriminations, which arise from ignorance, of not seeing the oneness. So everywhere you look, you can see these manifesting. They're popping up like wildflowers, always. It's important to name them. Give them a name when you see something, name it. It helps us to then clarify, to not just stay in a foggy abstraction of, oh yes, we live in a culture of greed. So you see it come up in yourself when you go to the supermarket and you see, uh-oh, that shelf is almost empty. I better buy up what's left. Or, I don't know, whatever. We see it in ourselves all the time. We're eating with our family and someone serves themselves more of the food than you served yourself. And there's that little tinge of, oh, I want that much. There can be the having the third glass of wine or something. Notice it, name it, acknowledge it. So noticing it, naming it, and then the step is to acknowledge it. We have this chant that during retreats every morning where it's called the Gatha of Atonement. So we atone for all of the sufferings we've created. During the retreat, we chant this every morning. This atonement, this is not some Judeo-Christian guilt trip, okay? This is just acknowledging. We're not judging it. We're just acknowledging whatever it is that we've contributed to. And by acknowledging it, then we own it, we become one with it, and we don't carry it on. It's a way of putting an end to it. For me, as an American, two of my great deep, deep guilt trips, I would say, are related to the American Indians and to the African Americans. As a white American, I feel this very strongly. And in Minneapolis, there is a big population in Minnesota of American Indians. And although me personally, I had nothing to do with the genocide that is at the origin of the settlement of the United States of America, I feel deeply guilty about it. To the point where when I lived in the Zen Center and Michel Dubois, who lived there too, he had been deeply involved with, he's a Frenchman, but he had been involved with the American Indian movement in the United States and had even made a film about it. And so knew lots of people, lots of prominent people in the Indian communities. And once he brought an Indian chief to the house where we were living. He was visiting and whatever. And I came down the stairs and he was there and Michelle said, I want to introduce you to His name was Virgil Shootstraight or Killstraight, no, something Killstraight, I think. And I was horrified. I could barely look the man in the face. I felt just so ashamed. Although I had nothing to do with, personally, my life, I had not taken any Indian lives to exist there, right? At the same time, I own it. I fully am responsible for it. It's painful. I don't know what to do about it, but I acknowledge it. And the same has to go for the Black Americans. We have to acknowledge it. And to passive indifference is not the answer. Silent complicity. You know, they're saying that one of those policemen of the four just stood there and did nothing. He will be charged as an accomplice, just like the others. He didn't do anything. And this is where complicity and silence and passive indifference are a problem. I'm not in the US right now. None of us are. No one else feels this collective guilt that I do in the same way. At the same time, we can all, by looking into these issues in ourselves, looking into these issues in our own communities, not being attached to differences, seeing the oneness of life, because the whole point of Zen practice is that, wakening up, awakening to the oneness of life. That's what we need to do. That's what our practice is about, in this situation, but in every situation. So, you know, I talk regularly about letting go and and experiencing oneness and seeing the differences in our various practices, and how just sitting on your cushion and letting things be for even 10 minutes, like we did now, that's a practice, that's a deep practice of letting go. And not being attached to the differences, not being attached to one place or another, one thought or another, one sensation or another. Someone this morning told me about some amazing experience she had diving into the ocean and oneness, and very beautiful experience. And it wasn't that she was in the water, it was the water, it was in her, and it was a beautiful experience. And so she said, but it's not here now. This was an experience she had during the weekend. And she said, I don't know if I should try to get it back. And I stopped her and I said, you can try to get it back, but you won't. That experience was that experience at that moment. This moment is this experience. And if you attach to that previous experience, you will not fully experience now, this moment, this experience. That's what, when we sit, we do. We let go of whatever experience it is. Or at least that's our intention, let's say, because it's not easy. We all know how difficult it is to not become attached to a thought, an experience, some story we're telling ourselves in our head, you know, something is uncomfortable and we can't stop thinking about it. The person next to us is really annoying the way they breathe. We can't wait for lunch, whatever it is. But those are all great, great occasions to practice. Every moment we can name those three poisons. Every moment we can look at what we're attached to. Every moment we can look into what is black and what is white. I read an interesting story today about how in Japanese, often in Japanese monasteries or temples, there is a statue of this, what's called the deity of great blackness. And it's the dark, in Japanese, I wrote the name down, it's Daiko Kuten. And I think in Sanskrit, it's Mahakala, right? So this is like the black deity. And it's put in the monasteries or in the temples. Of course, I've never been to Japan, so I haven't actually witnessed this, but this is what the person writing the article is saying. That, and also this applies to, in Japanese Zen, everything is black. People wear black robes, the cushions are black, the mats are black, the rakusus are black, everything is black. Because black is seen as the absence of color and also the expression of all colors. Black, so in this situation, blackness is all-embracing. And at the same time, like our square is here on the screen, everything and everyone comes out of the blackness. So what does that tell us about how we, our cultures, at least the Western white man culture, considers blackness, at least in skin color? It's really deluded, right, to make that kind of judgment that is made, focusing only on the differences, missing the oneness. You know, as I think I said the other day, something about red states and blue states, which in America is the big deal, you know, Republican states and Democrat states. But there are no red states and blue states. You know, there are no black people and white people. Of course there are. There are men and women. But at the same time, we're just one. We're all one. Can we, you know, we always talk about seeing I am the other or something. Self and other as being one or something like that. But maybe what we could, maybe a different way of saying it that would be almost more appropriate is not that I am the other, because that's kind of a concept we have a hard time grasping unless we have that direct experience. But it's more like equalizing self and other. You know, which helps us to see the difference and the sameness at the same time. And, you know, in the American Constitution, you know, in the American Declaration of Independence, it says all men are created equal. But unfortunately, it remains a concept which is not embodied. So we can walk around saying that. It's like walking around talking about the three poisons. But if it stays abstract, it means nothing. Who cares? Like we say, it's just lip service, right? So can we really see the equality of self and other, the difference in the sameness? Like I said, you know, these, now we are, well, 14 screens, squares, rectangles. The rectangles are all the same size, and they all have the same basic quality and nature. But what arises in each of those rectangles is completely different, is fabulously rich with all kinds of details. There's even one that doesn't have an image on it. It only has words. Yet each rectangle is of equal value. And allows total space for whatever is inside, let's say, that rectangle, to manifest freely, beautifully, richly. All emerging from this black background. As I also regularly say, Zen is a practice of inclusion. It's not a practice of exclusion. So it's not that we have to eliminate things or exclude things in us, within ourselves, things in society. We welcome it all. It's all Dharma. The challenge and the point of our practice is to include it all, to widen, to open our hearts, to include, to see everything as your practice. Like I said a few weeks ago, to become entangled with everything and everyone, whatever it is, however it manifests. Take it to heart. Lose your head and take it to heart. So, if we can let go of our positions, if we can let go of our beliefs, our biases, our attachments, then we have the opportunity to open our hearts to humility and love. And to really be present with whatever is, whatever we're feeling, whatever is arising. As you can maybe sense, I feel very passionate about this subject. And I think I'm only beginning to scratch the surface of how to address it, what to do with it, how to express it. But I am making it my practice. In fact, it already was my practice. This is nothing new, right? But the form is different. So it's another rectangle in which something else is manifested. So now I would like to open it up for, if you have anything to say. I'm sure a lot of you have feelings about this, what's been happening these days, and or not, whatever you'd like to share or ask questions. We can use the hand raising mechanism if you want to, which you'll find in the participants list. I think. Yes, Anna. You have to unmute, yeah.
Hello, everybody. I have just in front of my house, I have a very big hostel full of people that are refugees. There has been last days have been very hot, so all the windows of my house are open, and I can hear every day, every night, you know, these people. There are many people living in these rooms, but they are just women and children, but many. The women, they have very strong and powerful voices. And there are children from all ages, babies and young boys, especially boys. And I don't know how long they are there. They live there because I didn't use to spend all day at home. So I didn't notice they were there. They live there. And what happened in that house, yellow house, in front of my house. So first, I didn't notice they were there. Second, now that I live so many hours inside and I work in my computer so many hours, I hear, you know, all the sounds of their daily lives, and it's amazing how they can keep. They are very noisy, but now that I understand that there are so many, and there are so many young boys and children, I don't know how they can be so, even they are noisy, how can be so silent, you know? Because I don't know how many space they have, but there are many. Some try to go to the window, but then there is a woman that comes and grasps, come inside. And that's their life. I live in a quarter that there are many hostels like that, because the Portuguese government received these refugees and they put them in the houses like that. The house looks okay, but you know, I just want to share these, because maybe they are there for, I don't know, 2 years, but I just noticed they were there now, you know, these 3 months. I didn't notice. I know there are people there, but I don't know who they were. Now, sometimes I go to the window and I say hello to the little babies, and they say hello, and I show them things, and they respond. And now I begin to see that there are people there. This morning, for example, I wake up and there was a woman crying, you know. 1 week ago, there was doctors and a big apparatus of people, because they were making them the test if they are infected or not, because they are also, you know, together. So that is what I wanted to share with you today.
Can I ask you a question, Anna? Yeah. So you noticed them now because you had the windows open, or because you've been confined in your house and can't go anywhere?
Both. I know there are people, but now I know their faces, and I noticed that they are just women and children, and there are many. I didn't notice that before.
So this is a really interesting example of, so when you stop, when you, the being confined for 2 months or whatever, however long, you stop and you're in one place. And when you open the windows, when you open your eyes, when you open your heart, well, then you see things that you did never see before. That's really a great, great example. Beautiful. Thank you. Debbie?
Amy, I can't get any distance from any of this at all. Long enough, I've been crying for about 3 or 4 or 5 days. There's no way I can't be, rational is not my desire, but I can't even really, I know
can't
that.
Really, we can't really hear you very well, or I can't.
Sorry, okay. I can't find any distance between me and these events sufficiently to not just be weeping all the time. I've made a few rules. Don't look at it until you have some breakfast, because people are sending me all kinds of videos and I'm following. But there are two situations like this. Some of it I think is because it stems from my childhood almost, that we've been seeing scenes like this. So it's probably an old wound that's reopened, but I either don't think about it at all, or I'm completely sucked into it. What do I do?
Yeah, so that's that, you know, that speaks to what I think a lot of us can relate to, that it's just too much, and so we turn off, or we're overwhelmed and we're caught up in the emotions and the crying and the horror of it and all of that. It's important to honor both of those positions, to see what, how, when we experience those two polar opposites almost. And try to, you know, maybe a suggestion is to not, instead of trying to push it away, you know, just allow, you can take whatever emotions come up. You can handle it. You're big enough for it. And you don't need to push it away. Of course, it's overwhelming, and, you know, you think, oh, I'm going to sit here and cry all day. Well, you probably won't. You probably won't. If you try to see through those emotions at the same time as you let them be. So like when I say questioning, looking into them. So what are these tears about? What is this anger about? Where is this coming from? It's hard to get distance, I know, because like you, like me, Debbie, you're American. And like you say, we've been seeing these things since forever. I remember when I was a child and Martin Luther King was killed, my mother sat in front of the television weeping. I don't think I had ever seen my mother weep like that before. And it made a big impression on me. I was a little kid, you know, it made a really big impression on me. I can still picture the TV screen when the bulletin came on saying Martin Luther King had been assassinated. And, you know, we thought that it was going to be enough and things would change. When Obama was elected in 2008, I wept. I woke up in the morning, I looked at my computer screen and saw him giving his speech in Chicago, and I sat there and I wept. I was stunned that I was crying, but I did. I thought, okay, this is it now. But you can take it and honor those tears. That's speaking volumes. That's what we all need to do. And then, you know, I saw this thing yesterday, this video of these people in Washington, D.C. Some guy was singing Lean on Me. I don't know if anyone else saw this video. The Bill Withers song, you know, Lean on Me. And then he got the crowd to sing it. The whole crowd was singing Lean on Me. It was so powerful. Just be there for each other, you know. Be there, listen. For your own self as well. Just listen to your heart. Your heart is weeping. Listen to it. Be with it. Let it be. And when you need to pull away, that's okay too. It's okay too. Turn it off, you know. Turn it off. And you can then get to a point where you can know when to listen and when not, and what to look at and what not. It's not easy. It's not easy. But those tears are also tears of compassion. And wisdom. We have to let our hearts break, people. You know, like the Polish rabbi said, the only whole heart is a broken heart. And our hearts are breaking over this. And, you know, like my favorite Leonard Cohen, because we're in the cracks now. We have to go into these cracks, but that's where the light is. Karen, yeah. You have to unmute.
Hi.
Hi.
This is more of a kind of general question. But what's been happening to me is that when things get really painful and pain gets too painful, you say turn it off or something similar to that. But when sometimes you know when to go, I mean, you get different levels of pain, and sometimes I can't do anything with mine now. It's just too painful over the last 2 or 3 months, and sometimes I don't know where to go. You go to a level and you go through the fear and then I just get depressed, and that's really hard. And you know, you can go in the direction of the depression, but sometimes that's so overwhelming. And somehow you just want to push it away, but you don't want to push it away. you want to stay with it, but it could be so powerful and so unknown, and you don't have anybody to maybe hold your hand in it all. I'm just wondering what you thought.
So are you, when you say in the past few months, you're referring to all the events of the world? I mean,
yeah, just everything's been so tough. Everything's been so, everything's been changing. And I know in Zen, we're meant to be changing all the time, but I've realized I don't like change. I find it hard, especially in reality, when it's actually hitting you in the face and there's things come up and you're not so busy anymore and you just have to face it. And, you know, so facing yourself a lot.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, Zen offers us also this, of course, there's the teaching of impermanence and all that. At the same time, it offers us this wonderful teaching of nothing special, just this. So, you know, I quote Layman Pang of, you know, carrying water, chopping wood, right? Mm-hmm. So we can take refuge, if you will, mm-hmm. in moments like that, when it seems overwhelming, whether it's pain, depression, you know, there's clinical depression, which I'm not equipped to deal with. I'm not a therapist or a psychiatrist, whatever, but just kind of a general depressive state. We can take refuge in whatever is here right now. So whatever you need to do at this moment, whatever arises, whether it's cleaning the toilet, making your breakfast, the bird that's singing on the tree, the rain that's coming down, your neighbor's car, whatever is just right here, right now. I say take refuge in that because it brings us back to this present moment without turning us away from everything else. Because just because you admire the silver paint on your neighbor's car, or see how dirty it is, or admire how he's washing it or something, that doesn't mean that you're forgetting about the coronavirus, the political upheavals, the you know, unemployment, your own situation, difficulties with living alone or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. But you can bring yourself back to just what is here right now. Mm-hmm. That's where liberation lies always. That's where wisdom and compassion lie as well. Mm-hmm. And it's like in the meditation when we, in Zazen, when we just come back, we count our breath, we lose track of it, we go off, we come back, we come back. So you can come back, and I say take refuge because that's a powerful image for us. You know, come home, find shelter in just this, what's right here, cutting the carrots.
Yes, thank you. It's in all that, it does feel like a gift to feel whatever you feel, the pain or whatever. There's a gift in that. There's something that is unexpected and fresh as well that I value. And when things become unexpected, it's something to look at. It's something new to look at. And I do find that a gift as well. So it's kind of got two sides to it, which is helpful. Yeah. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, it's 9 o'clock, folks, in Paris. Wherever you are, it may not be that time, but that's the time that we end. We'll chant the vows. Joa sent them to everyone.
Sentient beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to put an end to them. Reality is boundless. I vow to see it. The Buddha way is unsurpassable. I vow to embody it. Sentient beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to put an end to them. Reality is boundless. I vow to see it. The Buddha way is unsurpassable. I vow to embody it. Sentient beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Emotions are inexhaustible. I vow to put an end to them. Reality is boundless. I vow to see it. The Buddha way is unsurpassable. I vow to embody it. Let me respectfully remind you, life and death are of supreme importance. Time swiftly passes by and opportunity is lost. Let us awaken, awaken. Take heed, do not squander your life. Well, thank you, Roshi. Thank you, everyone. And
thank you, Joa.
Have a good evening.